Albuquerque. From the KNKT broadcast studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. We are almost out of 2020, and my guest today is going to stand up with me and clap and shout for joy when we're out of 2020. My friend Paul Gessing, Rio Grande Foundation, is in studio with me this afternoon. Hi, Paul.
Happy to be here. Let's get rid of 2020 and hope for a better 2021 ahead of us.
Well, Paul, what I get a kick out of is we're going to review all the things we talked about this year, what happened and so forth. But what's funny is you always have too much to say, and I don't mean that in a negative way. You could talk on this program for 4 hours every day and never run out of anything to say. So you sent me notes today with 48 different things on it. So I love that.
Well, yeah, maybe I missed my calling. I should have been in the talk radio, but
that's right.
Yeah, we'll share plenty, and yeah, it was a very interesting year, and there's, you know, right up to the end, there's big issues to discuss, especially at the federal level.
I've noticed that a lot of people that are listening to the program love to have their computers in front of them while they're listening, and I would encourage you, if you do, to go to RioGrandeFoundation.org. Rio Grande Foundation. That's how Mr. Gessing says it. The Prez says it, Rio Grande.
Rio.
So RioGrande Foundation.org. And Rio Grande Foundation is a think tank. They talk about socioeconomic issues. And Paul, you really want people to read all the information that you publish. You have a free newsletter. You have a blog. Tell us a little bit about all the resources you have.
Yeah, you can go to errorsofenchantment.com and read about what we write on a weekly basis. We've got a few posts up this week. We have a podcast. If this hour is not enough for you, you want to hear more. We have great guests. We have great information every single week there at Tipping Point, New Mexico. You can sign up for updates on any or all of those. And at RioGrandeFoundation.org itself, among the many things we have there, it'll be very handy soon. We have a legislative tracking website where we track all the bills up in Santa Fe, rate them based on their impact on your freedom, and then rate all the legislators for their votes throughout the session. And, you know, we don't know exactly what this session is going to look like, but it's not going to be like a normal session that we've had. And it's something we're going to do our best to keep track of and make sure that you have all the information about what's happening in Santa Fe. Because, you know, when it comes to New Mexico, those are the critical people making the decisions that affect us. I don't think before 2020 we fully understood just how much state-level policymakers could really do to us. But this year has shown that the governor, in certain circumstances, has pretty much – without, you know, overblowing it, dictatorial power in the state of New Mexico.
And that is short of liberty, my friend.
It's way short. Yeah, there have been monarchs throughout human history that have respected the liberties and led as benevolent leaders. But I don't believe that that is the way the founding fathers viewed things, that you had to rely on the good graces of the monarch.
Yeah. Paul, I want to start today. We're going to talk about a couple federal issues like stimulus coming out. But before I do that, I want to make just a general statement that I've observed doing some study of our forefathers, the Constitution, the development of the Declaration of Independence, and then the Constitution, et cetera. And what I've kind of seen overall is that our forefathers did things that they thought would take into account human nature, which is not different than a biblical view. It, you know, we have selfish, self-centered people. All of us have that at some time in our life. Mm-hmm. And the way they designed the government was designed to help us overcome ourselves, to protect us mm-hmm. from ourselves. They didn't do things because they could. They did things because it was right. Now I'm going to shift right to Lee County and Eddy County and counties where there's primarily a large Republican contingency. The Democrats in the state now are talking about redistricting so that they will be heavily Democratic. And, Paul, is it not proper to assume that if our forefathers had a decision like this, They would take every voting district in the state of New Mexico and divide them up so that they would be as equal as possible. That seems to be the right thing to do for democracy.
Well, you're talking redistricting, and that is based on the census, which we all were inundated with ads. I don't know if you guys had them on this station, but certainly you tuned into any media outlet throughout New Mexico and really around the country throughout 2020. And census was a big part of what you heard because everybody wanted to be, you know, counted. We're just coming off the Christmas season, and census is a big part of that one as well. So they do redistrict the you know, legislative, they'd redistrict the congressional seats, et cetera, for population changes. And this election, we saw Yvette Harrell, a Republican, win a congressional seat that had been narrowly lost in the last election. And then we had the House Speaker, Brian Egolf, who's really going to be the running point on redistricting in New Mexico, along with the governor and other, you know, they're all Democrats, elected officials. And basically he said in a somewhat impolitic moment, hey, we're going to make sure that that district is no longer Republican. Now, they have to keep the numbers somewhat equal, but based on New Mexico's voting patterns, at least in this election and in years past, it is pretty easy for them to both adhere to the numerical equality, but also make sure that a Republican seat in Congress is very difficult. Now, as if that wasn't complicated enough, we have Deb Haaland here in Congressional District 1, and we certainly haven't talked since this. Deb Haaland will more than likely be Joe Biden's Interior Secretary. She'll manage the federal lands, including Native American lands, which, of course, she's a Native American. So we will soon have a special session right here in Congressional District 1, assuming that she goes through the process, which she may or may not get held up, but I suspect she'll be she'll be able to get through there, get confirmed. Yeah, I was looking for that word. So assuming that the Democrats get that seat, they will have the ability to kind of move votes around and make, in the next election, it very difficult for Yvette Harrell to win re-election. And quite frankly, that just follows with the voting patterns of New Mexicans. So we can complain, we can say this isn't right, but that's the way redistricting is done. And it's something that the courts have kind of said we're not going to get involved in on one side or the other. And famously, this is called gerrymandering, and G-E-R-R-Y. And it goes back to the very founding of this country. I believe Elbridge Gerry was a signer of perhaps the Declaration and the Constitution, and some political cartoonist of the late 18th century did a cartoon of a gerrymander, which was a very weird-looking creature based on the congressional district, and thus the term entered the English lexicon. And it'll be interesting, though. I mean, heck, if the Republicans somehow pull out Congressional District 1, then you have two out of three seats under Republican leadership and control, and then the Democrats have to determine, well, can we shift these votes this way or that way, and how does that all work? So much of this just depends on people turning out to vote and party leadership and control and being competitive. So if you want to be competitive and save Yvette Harrell, if you're in CD1 here in Albuquerque, then you make sure your friends and family members get out to vote when that special election hits.
And the special election may happen as soon as January?
Well, as soon as Deb Haaland is confirmed, there'll be a running clock, and I want to say it's something on the order of 90 days or a couple months. So it will be a very short turnaround, presumably a lower turnout, presumably a very compressed campaign schedule. And one of the notable things is that you won't have the traditional primary process. The parties will meet behind closed doors and pick candidates. And again, we can argue whether this is good, bad, or indifferent. And there are discussions of having what's called a open election, where you just have the slate of candidates from both parties, and then you figure it out that way. I don't have a problem in a compressed special election under this scenario having the party bosses, if you, I know people talk so ill about those smoke filled rooms. Well, they're not smoke filled anymore, but, they, you know, there's some reason to have that for the expediting this process.
And of course, Michelle Garcia Holmes, who is the one that lost in the general election to Deb Haaland, it would love to have that seat and
wants to run
again on behalf of the Republican Party. But I can't help but think about Mark Ronchetti and his great showing in his Senate race. Maybe he would want to do it. So there are a lot of Republican candidates, and I can't imagine who the Democrats would bring forward.
There's already been names. Antoinette Cedillo Lopez, she's former UNM law professor, as progressive left as Deb Haaland. There is a Melanie Stansberry. She's a state rep, not quite at that same level of left wing. But there are Republicans and Democrats already putting their names in the ring. And, you know, we've got to wait for Deb Haaland to make her way through the process. And that could be a slow process. And we're, of course, going to know. You know, the Senate is the one that confirms. The House is really out of this. So it'll be potentially a more or less Republican body based on the results of Georgia's general election here right after the new year.
And that is actually, they're doing early voting right now because the election is officially the 5th of January, which is next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we should have results win based on our national elections now. We could expect those sometime in the next 60 days.
Heaven help us if this goes into that kind of long recount situation down in Georgia. My hope is that it's a relatively rapid turnaround and we don't have the kind of allegations back and forth over election fraud, et cetera. But I know there's already concerns about the process and we'll just see how Georgia shakes out. So it could go anywhere from a 50-50 tie with Kamala Harris, the vice president, being a tiebreaker, or could be a 52-48 Republican-controlled Senate, or 51-49 if maybe they split. So, it's a very heated situation down in Georgia right now. And, of course, that's just on top of all the other fun and excitement we've dealt with over the year.
Well, and I was joking around with someone the other day because I read an article about someone who said that they had 6,000 votes, 6,000 mail-in ballots that were sent out to people that no longer reside in Georgia, mm-hmm. and that those people were voting from other locations other than Georgia as no longer residents. So I just joked around and said, well, maybe I'll take off this week so that I could fly out to Georgia, vote, and then get back here to New Mexico. And nobody found that particularly funny. So
a little close to home there, Jim, little close to home because people are doing some things that aren't too far off of what you're talking about. And, I think election integrity across our country is a very important discussion to have moving forward. And, I haven't seen the kinds of overt fraud that the president has talked about. Just, I haven't seen the evidence yet, and you got to prove this in the court of law, but that doesn't mean that there aren't serious issues. And of course, these were exacerbated by the mail-in election, things that have happened across our country, including right here in New Mexico. I am a big fan of people showing up in person at a certain point. Doesn't have to be on election day. I might compress by a week or two here in New Mexico, the in-person voting, but I do think in person is the way to go, and this mail stuff is not a good idea.
So a lot of people will look at this positive. Donald Trump, our president, signs the $900 billion stimulus bill, asks for the checks to be increased from $600 per person to $2,000, and I understand that that's being contemplated right now, but our government is now making arrangements to get $600 checks in everybody's hands.
Yeah, we're still dealing with that very important issue of how much money flows into individual people's checking accounts or bank accounts. Obviously, there are other provisions. It's one important part of this to say, look, just because everyone gets is $600 a piece doesn't mean that's the limit of what Americans are getting. Extended unemployment benefits are another aspect of this. There are certainly a lot of handouts in this legislation that we're not fans of. One of the biggest red flags in this bill is that it explicitly prohibits money from this legislation to be used for school choice. Now, New Mexico, unfortunately, you know, we're lock, stock, and barrel but with the teachers' unions. The Democratic Party and the teachers' unions kind of operate hand in glove. So the first round, the CARES Act, passed back in March, we did not use any of that money here in New Mexico to help non-public schools. But other states did, and that was specifically called out and prohibited thanks to advocacy on behalf of the teachers' unions. Now, there was a lot of other provisions containing foreign aid for foreign countries and real questions about that. Whether we should get $2,000 checks or $600 checks, I'm not really a fan of any of that, but I do also think that we need to reopen our economy. And what we're doing with this federal money is subsidizing states like here in New Mexico, where our governors kept us on lockdown with so many businesses unable to reopen. Now, there are states that are going gangbusters right now. There are states with 3.1, 3.2 unemployment rates that are relatively open and doing fine. New Mexico is not one of those. And, you know, that is the ultimate problem, is whether you're doing $600 or $2,000 extended unemployment, whatever you're doing, you're just prolonging the economic problems that we face as a nation and taking us just incredibly further deeper into debt as a country as well.
We're going to take a quick break and say hello and thank you to a couple of our advertisers here on KNKT and the people that support the programming here. Our political process every year kind of starts with the legislative session. And when Paul comes back, he's going to review for us what happened this year in the legislative session right before COVID hit and where we've come from then. So stay with us on ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing in studio. We'll be right back.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonsted-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
Serving you and your family day and night. Call Bosky when you want it done right. For heating and cooling, plumbing and more. 24/7 we'll be at your door.
Locally grown, locally owned. Bosky Heating and Cooling. A portion goes back into the community. 444-7200.
For quality service like a breath of fresh air. Call Bosky and we'll be there.
No doubt 2020 has brought setbacks. Ready for your comeback?
You know you're in a crisis when life is overwhelming you. When everywhere you look, there is a problem.
Tony Evans says your past does not need to be your future. Do you agree? Then you'll want a copy of Tony Evans' book, Your Comeback. And with any donation to Star 88 or KNKT in December, you'll get a copy of this dynamic book. You need this book to launch your life into a comeback. Just give a gift to star88.fm or knkt.com. Click under Donate, and you'll be helping our station make the end of the year budget. We all need a comeback.
In a crisis, you need to see the living God.
Make a donation at star88.fm or knkt.com under Donate and receive Tony Evans' book, Your Comeback.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation in studio. Want to point you to their website, which is riograndefoundation.org. You will have all kinds of fun. It's very interesting. Paul's already mentioned that they have a newsletter. They have Tipping Point, which is a weekly podcast, Paul.
Yep.
And all kinds of topics, a lot of things common to this broadcast. If you want to listen to this broadcast after Paul talks, I post links to everything that he talks about to their podcast site and also to Errors of Omissions, which is a blog that...
Errors of Enchantment.
Errors of Enchantment.
That's okay.
What did I say? Errors of Omissions? That's like insurance.
Isn't yeah, it is.
Errors of Enchantment. And that really has a lot of good... I get your newsletter. I get links to all of these kind of things on a weekly basis, and it's... really, really helpful. So, Paul, start us off with the 30-day legislative session. It was a short session. It was supposed to have to do with budgeting. We came up with an increased budget. Of course, in all fairness, nobody knew COVID was coming.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit of year in review here. And 2020 started off normally enough. It does feel like ancient history at this point. Pictures of full restaurants, people just hanging out, slapping each other on the back, having intimate conversations. And of course, in New Mexico, when you talk about the new year, as we started off in 2020, that means a legislative session. That's the first big political event on everybody's calendar. And we had a 30-day session. And New Mexico, while this year we moved even further down the path of progressive, left-wing, big government, this state has pretty much been dominated by that ilk, that group, for a long time. And so they had 30 days here in this session, spent a lot of money when oil and gas looked like the boom was never going to end. So over the last 2 years, so 2019 and 2020 sessions, but the budget went up by 21%, which is massive growth. Budgets really should be going up 2, 3, 4%, maybe in a really good year, 5%. 21% growth in 2 years is out of control. We eventually figured out later on in the year why that was a problem, because oil and gas, along with everything else, kind of came to a crashing halt, partially due to COVID-19. But the 30-day session also saw a bill that passed. This was one of the most convoluted things you'll ever see in politics, but we have something called dummy bills. Basically, a bill had been introduced that was giving away brand new powers to public employee unions, and they were going to be empowered to more easily organize and to be at odds with their employers, which is local governments, universities around the state. And those folks include, folks like UNM. These are not conservatives. They expressed frustration and concern to the legislature about that particular legislation. It was killed. Then it was rebrought forth in a what's called a dummy bill, which is essentially a number that's reserved with no text. And that text was dumped in. It was revised somewhat. It was more of a compromise, but then it was brought back. And in 4 days, it passed both houses and was signed by the governor during the 30-day session. So there was some good news in the session. Public employee retirement, that para was improved. It was put on a sounder footing. We have massive issues with our pension systems for government employees in New Mexico. And we have two systems. Para is for essentially anybody outside of education. ERB is for within education. Para was reformed, and Rio Grande Foundation played a big role in that. ERB is still very much in trouble, and you're going to hear a lot about ERB as we move into this 2021 session. So as the 30-day session goes, they had red flag legislation, which was a really bad bill to, concerning civil liberties and individual rights to own guns. So there was a lot that happened this session that wasn't particularly good in 2020. And we expect that 2021, a 60-day session, far to the left in terms of the legislature, all the moderate Democrats really got beat back in June. So I'm kind of, we got a lot to go through in this year, but that's something that will affect us moving forward. But 2020 session, 30 days, and that's some of the highlights or lowlights as they may be.
And Paul, one of the focuses of our heart here at KNKT is we, of course, really appreciate pro-life candidates from any party. Well, you mentioned moderate Democrats. A lot of the moderate Democrats were specifically voted out of office in the Democrat primary last June because they were pro-life.
Right. Yeah, Planned Parenthood played a big role in some of those June primaries. And, New Mexico has a abortion law on the books that has been maybe irrelevant or superseded by federal Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision. And there has been discussion mostly among the pro-choice advocates about repealing that law. It is still sufficiently a heated enough issue that that became a hot button in those primaries. And as you said, the moderates, the people who oppose repealing that legislation, which isn't in effect, were largely defeated, largely due to, you know, just outsized financial contributions from Planned Parenthood and other organizations. So as much as I care about the fiscal issues and the tax issues, the legislature really moved left on social issues, which were guns and abortion. And I suspect that that abortion law will be repealed. Now, of course, this is all setting up, and I know we're a little bit off course here, but this is because of the ongoing evolution of the U.S. Supreme Court. And of course, we saw another presumably pro-life conservative Trump appointee, Amy Coney Barrett, named to the court this year. And the left believes that this is going to result in Roe v. Wade going into the dustbin of history. I'm a little more suspect of that, but that's what this is all about. And we'll see. It'll be a very interesting, interesting time on abortion and other issues, and that'll certainly come up in this session.
And if you're listening and you're feeling hopeless, or you're listening and you don't know what to do, you want to take some action, first thing I guarantee you should do is pray. And you need to get information about what you're praying about. Rio Grande Foundation has a lot of very accurate information about who's doing what in the state of New Mexico, particularly few national issues, but it's a source of information. And we have a lot of other guests on our programs. We have the Right to Life Committee and Ethel Maharg. We have CareNet with Stephanie Luke on the program frequently, talking about right to life issues and abortion. And, you know, Paul, I know you don't address these kind of issues, but for me, I'm just tired of the lists that New Mexico seems to be the top on. We're on the top of all the bad lists, and we're on the bottom of all the good lists, and that's just got to change. I'm going to give you a real, an analogy that will be after your own heart. I won't mention any sports teams in New Mexico that can't play defense and prevent the other team from getting layups, but I will say this. When that kind of thing happens with a coach of a Division I university, the competency of that coach is questioned, and people can come alongside and suggest alternatives and try to help any way they can, which, by the way, I'll raise my hand and say I have personally done. But when it comes to politics, I'm going to call our legislators, I'm going to call our state senators coaches. These people need to be out of here. That we are last on every good list there is in the country. I start reading about Kids Count 2020, and I see that our third grade reading levels are the lowest in the country. I see that our eighth grade math scores are the lowest in the country. I see our high school graduation rates lowest in the country. Well, what's it going to take to change that, Paul?
Well, that is a very big question because, you know, for years, the Rio Grande Foundation has, of course, worked on improving New Mexico, and there's no silver bullet. You know, New Mexico does, quite frankly, so many things wrong when it comes to public policy that it's not easy to pinpoint a single thing that we could or should do to improve things. But having more prosperity economically in New Mexico, combined with a higher performing, more responsive education system, has historically been where we've come down and we've worked on issues, everything from reforming the gross receipts tax so that it's not such an obstacle to small business formation, school choice, deregulation of our economy. So those are kind of the anodyne evergreen things that we've always worked on. Now we are obviously involved, as everybody in their right mind, quite frankly, should be, with trying to get New Mexico out from under these incredibly unfair, unreasonable COVID-19 restrictions. So, you know, reopening business, but allowing them to have flexibility in complying with COVID safe practices and having accountability for that. It shouldn't be just a Wild West sort of thing, nor would I ever expect it to be, given the current leadership of our state. And then the science from all over the world, all over the country, here in New Mexico, has always reflected that that kids should be in person in school, and doing that and pushing our policymakers to make that happen again. It's so frustrating that, you know, and I have to say it, because the left, generally speaking, talks science, science, science. And they love to say that they have all the science on their side on global warming or something. But when it comes to abortion, which we just talked about, the science is not on their side, and it's moving further and further in the pro-life direction. Then you have the education and the COVID and all of that. And the science again is saying kids should be back in school. And what are we here? My kids went home on March 11th for the last day of school at their public school. They had a debacle of online school throughout the rest of the last school year. Now, my kids have been homeschooled since the beginning of this year, and other kids have been dealing with this virtual situation, which some have had decent results, but you know, and the data show, socioeconomically, the poor kids, the rural kids, the minority kids without access to the internet are the ones getting crushed by this whole thing. So as bad as it was before, I hate to say it, it's going to be even more tragic for all of these young people who not only miss out on school, but miss out on all their recreational opportunities, in school, out of school, sports, friendships, all that stuff. It is nothing short of a tragedy, and our governor shows virtually no sympathy with any of those people and no willingness to stand up and say, look, we need to get back to school. And I don't know. APS is one school district in the state. Supposedly they're going to go back to a hybrid model late in January. But on the other hand, Ryan Stewart, the Secretary of Education, said that he hinted very strongly that we were not going to see in-person school widespread throughout New Mexico this year, this calendar school year. So I don't know. It's incredibly frustrating.
Paul, I want to talk to you about what I'm going to call practical science. There's a school in Albuquerque, has been open the entire semester. Their whole population, their whole community is so blessed that they are together. We had the head of school, Terry Heisey, with Hope Christian School on the show, and they talked about just how important it has been for the students to be together. And he talked about the grades, and they talked about the way the students are progressing and doing well. Now, they're still missing sports. They're still missing music. They're still missing a lot of the art programs and things that are limited. But they are together. They are learning. They've not had an outbreak. And they have best practices that I asked Terry about. Would he share those with the governor? And Terry said that he would. I detected, and this is just purely from me now, it's not from Terry, I detected that he kind of thought, yeah, she won't ever ask me. But that's exactly what she should be doing. The governor should be asking. We're going to take a quick break. Paul Gessing is in studio with the Rio Grande Foundation. When we come back, we're going to talk about the authority and why the governor has been allowed to do the things that she does, really without consulting any Democrat or Republican representatives that are the people that represent our interests. We'll be back after these messages. Thank you.
It's not too late. It may be after Christmas, but it's not too late to bless a poor family in Asia with a gift that will change their lives. Before December 31st, you can give the gift of hope through Gospel for Asia. You can give a mother a sewing machine so she can clothe her family and sell garments to earn a living. You can give a family a pair of goats or a pair of chickens so they can sell milk or eggs. These may seem like small gifts, but for a family in Asia, these gifts open the door out of poverty, and these gifts open the door to the gospel. If you give your gift before December 31st, your donation is tax deductible for this year. Time is running out, but it's not too late. You can still go online at knkt.com. Look for the Gospel for Asia's Christmas Critter campaign, or call 855-572-4628. That's 855-572-4628. 972-4628.
The most important information anyone can receive comes from an understanding of the Bible. Only here do we find direct revelation about all things, about life and relationship with God. Life doesn't always provide us with time or opportunity to break away and study the Bible full time. That's why KNKT is dedicated to presenting round-the-clock teaching by some of the best communicators we can find about Scripture and how it relates to our lives. We need to be exposed to the full counsel of God's Word. And now, KNKT presents a Bible School of the Air. Each Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., KNKT will present Through the Bible, verse-by-verse teachings by Chuck Smith and Chuck Missler. Skip Heitzig, followed by a question-and-answer session with Scott Richards. We'll be rotating through the Old and New Testament, so drop into our Bible journey at any time and go through the entire Word of God with us. The KNKT Bible School of the Air. Tuition is free. The rewards are eternal. Take your seat Saturdays at 9 a.m. on 107.1 FM.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul, how is Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham able to make decisions about business closings and restrictions without our legislative representatives participating in those decisions?
Well, there is the legalistic discussion to be had, law passed in 2003 that gives the governor broad authority, combined with some other laws that were passed in prior years and even decades. And then there is the more practical way to describe the situation, and that is that the courts, until the courts hold the governor accountable for what she's doing and push back, and we've seen this in some states. There's been judges and even the U.S. Supreme Court, specifically on religious institutions and what they are allowed to and able to do, despite what governors in respective states have mandated or ordered. So we could say, and you and I could agree, that the governor's overstepping her bounds, that the legislature needs to have a seat at the table. But until a judge, until a court comes along and says that and essentially demands that the governor adhere to the law or change her interpretation of the law, then we're going to be stuck with this situation. And I have no idea. You know, it's one of those many problems with legislation that allows one person to control so much that they get to decide when the crisis is over. And that's so King so-and-so, you give us back this power whenever the crisis is over. Well, there was a tax on the books up until about 10 years ago that was passed under the Spanish-American War of, I believe, 1898. And we have emergency taxes that have been on the books in New Mexico for 40, 50 years. I shudder to think that we'll be under one person rule in New Mexico for that long, but it is certainly a question that needs to be asked. When do we have some light at the end of the tunnel? When do we know that the governor has to give up this emergency power? I would have assumed that a vaccine and large numbers of people getting it and certain levels of herd immunity would be enough to get us moving in that direction. Recent statements by the governor and others lead me to believe that there's not going to be a withdrawal of that power just if enough people get the vaccine, and et cetera. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of news nationally, and I want to trust the national news networks, not for the information they're providing, but for people to sort that all out. What I want to do is talk now about Deb Haaland becoming the Interior Secretary and really the risks to New Mexico in the oil and gas industry and the conflicts that she may have even managing tribal lands in our state with what the Interior Department and the agenda of the Biden administration is.
Yeah, of course, Deb Haaland is Biden's nominee to be Secretary of the Interior. It's a very challenging and difficult position for anybody. Haaland is important in the sense that, you know, while I may not appreciate necessarily Biden's emphasis on identity politics and trying to pick people just because they have, they're females or they have a certain background. I am sympathetic in this one that having a Native American run Department of the Interior with all that's happened to Native Americans in this country over hundreds of years of history and the fact that Native American lands reservations are under the Department of Interior. I totally understand the historical importance of that. But when it comes to the actual policies that Deb Haaland will likely undertake on behalf of Joe Biden, it scares me. Haaland is an activist. She is not a particularly knowledgeable or thoughtful person when the conversation comes to scientific issues and managing large tracts of land requires some scientific knowledge. She's somebody who vehemently opposes the oil and gas industry upon which New Mexico's economy is really based. We're down from 40% of our state budget. The last year, the data show 33.5% of our state budget comes directly from oil and gas, which considering that oil prices were below zero earlier this year, and, we've seen travel collapse in this country, especially air travel, I think that's a pretty impressive statistic still. And a lot of that comes off of federally owned lands, Bureau of Land Management, BLM. So we're in a position where somebody who wants to essentially prohibit oil and gas extraction on those federal lands is now in charge of managing those lands. And I shudder to think what could happen to New Mexico's economy if she is given kind of free rein by the Biden administration. There's also oil and gas and mineral wealth on native lands. And those tribes, which are impoverished, almost every single one of them, really need any economic activity and money they can get. While Deb Haaland was up at Standing Rock, which I believe is in South Dakota or North Dakota, it was over that pipeline issue, whether that was even on Native American lands or not is a open question. But she was up there camping out and working with the protesters. So she comes from a very, very radical position when you talk about energy issues. And her nomination is downright scary and should be to anybody involved in oil and gas in New Mexico, anyone who cares about the state budget in New Mexico, because if she does go through with that pledge to eliminate not just oil and gas, but potentially mining on federal lands, it could be a very, very challenging time ahead for New Mexico.
And I have to say that Deb Haaland has been largely representing citizens of Bernalillo County.
She has.
Central Albuquerque. And if you are interested in giving her feedback as she vacates that position and becomes the National Interior Secretary of the Interior, then you need to give her feedback on a positive way. Tell her how you feel. Tell her what you think. Tell her about the people you know that are working in those industries. Tell her about how you feel about dotting the landscape of New Mexico with wind turbines to generate electricity. Maybe you love it. Maybe you don't like it. I have a hard time understanding how the manufacture and disposal of batteries is a lot cleaner than, efficiently burning fossil fuels in cars. I haven't seen the science. I'm not saying either one is good or bad, but I know that New Mexico is largely dependent upon oil and gas. And we need to properly, and oil and gas is not just energy. It's plastics. It's composite materials. It's oil. Like they're making oil for cars out of gas, natural gas. I mean, there's just a lot that we don't even realize is manufactured from those materials. Petroleum-based materials are the basis of our life. You wouldn't have Tupperware if you didn't have oil.
Yep. You wouldn't have half the medical products that have been used to prevent COVID-19 from spreading, whether it's people in the hospital receiving treatment or those masks we're all being told to wear. Those are all petroleum-based in their production. So, yeah, when you talk about what we rely on in terms of our day-to-day lives, and the oil and gas industry, it transcends just, quote unquote, the automobiles that we drive in. It's everything, the clothes we wear, and everything that's so important to our lives. And, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. And, you know, interestingly enough, while I have no love lost for Michelle Lujan Grisham, she was offered that position before. Mm-hmm. That was the one that she turned down. And Lujan Grisham is actually much more reasonable, on oil and gas issues than Holland. So I'm not sure what that means, but, you know, ultimately Holland will be working with and relying on Joe Biden. Joe Biden will be the guy. Mm. You know, someday it could be Kamala Harris. Hopefully, here's to Joe Biden's health in 2021 and that he gets through all 4 years of his presidency, because I think he's going to have to pull the chains back on a lot of the activists in his administration. And Deb Haaland is going to be one of them that's going to be pushing very hard, very hard to the left, and very problematic for, in this case, right here in New Mexico.
President of the Rio Grande Foundation, Paul Gessing, is in studio with us this afternoon. We have one more segment with Paul, and we're going to do our best to get through as many of the topics that you are talking about in politics and economics for the state of New Mexico as we can. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You need to floss every day. This is Roger Patterson with a Minute of Vision for Life. Going to the dentist is not one of my favorite things to do. After having fractured my teeth while playing a pickup game of basketball in high school, I've tried to stay out of the dentist office as much as I can. Steel instruments scraping my teeth while smelling latex gloves just isn't what I enjoy. But visiting the dentist office a couple times a year reinforces what I'm doing well, and the lecture from the hygienist motivates me to floss more. Like flossing, the spiritual discipline of confession removes the remnants of our mistakes because we take our sins to the Lord and ask Him to cleanse us. Psalm 139, 23 through 24 says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Just as you need to floss every day, a healthy heart and soul is worth the daily discipline of searching out your ways.
You've been listening to Roger Patterson, author of A Minute of Vision for Men, a daily devotional available at visionforlife.org.
Well, 2020, it has been nice to know you. Don't ask for references. And we're moving on. 2021, we love you. And to celebrate, KNKT and Star 88 present 2021 Year of the Comeback. So here are the launch plans. We'll kick off the comeback on the first Saturday of the new year with a dynamite day of the absolute finest messages from Louis Giglio, Tony Evans, David Jeremiah, and Skip Heitzig. There will be giveaways and announcements about comeback events in 2021. Doesn't that number sound wonderful?
Yeah!
2021. Ah, you cannot get here too soon. Comeback 2021, fueled on Star 88 and KNKT by Power Ford. Faith, family, Ford.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Well, Paul, we've made it through the legislative session at the beginning of this year, and then COVID hit right around the 1st of March, into February. March 10th, you brought in a legal scholar, Josh Blackman. Tell us about that event.
Yeah, unfortunately, normally we do a lot of events across the year calendar, and Josh Blackman, somebody that definitely is worth following. He is a good free market attorney and legal scholar at South Texas College of Law in Houston. He's worth a follow on social media and whatnot. He's somebody, you know, as we have these important debates and discussions, whether it's the nominee at the Supreme Court or just issues being decided and discussed at the U.S. Supreme Court, he's somebody to definitely keep track of. We're going to try and do as many in-person events as possible throughout 2021. We have regular functions, including a monthly happy hour, kind of get-together, no-host situation called Liberty on the Rocks. We did some of those when restaurants were open and available. Unfortunately, we've had to cancel at this point January's function because restaurants are unable to open for in-person indoor dining. And that's one of the, if I had, you know, if I could get the governor to change any single aspect, well, it would probably be the schools first, and then it would be in-person dining, because I really think that it's just outrageous that we're here in January, well, soon to be January, and people are being expected to eat out a cold patio and that kind of situation, not to mention all the jobs and people being affected by that. But Josh Blackman, he's one of the go-tos for national legal scholarship and a very good conservative writer and thinker on these issues. We're happy to have him.
Yeah, doing things virtually is just not quite like doing it live, is it?
No, it's not. We try, and we're going to try. And again, folks, sign up to our email list or give us a follow on social media. Check on our websites regularly. We were very proud of, in fact, back in May, we had something called Liberty on Quarantine, which was kind of a Zoom version of what we did in Liberty on the Rocks, except we got to sit down with each of the GOP Senate candidates for U.S. Senate. So it was pre-primary. They had the primary in June. So Alisa Martinez, Mark Ronchetti, and Gavin Clarkson, I got to sit down and ask them questions in anticipation of their June primary. We are probably going to have a legislative preview version of Liberty on Quarantine, talking about issues that are on the agenda for the 60-day session coming up. So, again, keep your eyes peeled for that.
Paul, is that session now scheduled to be in person, or will it be virtual?
We don't know all the details quite yet on that. There's been a lot of people encouraging the governor or the leadership in the legislature to just address the budget and the initial time period, and then bring people back sometime, presumably after COVID has receded a bit over the summer. I don't think they have bought into that. So it looks like there's going to be some very odd virtual / in-person at the Santa Fe Convention Center and at the Roundhouse. The concern we have is such limited transparency, such limited openness. I had a conversation with a Democrat lobbyist this afternoon who shall remain nameless, but he said, when you're typically lobbying bills, you get people in the Roundhouse and you have a conversation, and the Roundhouse is like a big old toilet. You just wait till somebody goes around and you circle and catch them when they're going through the halls. And I mean that in the gentlest way, it's a toilet, but we won't talk about what is produced in the Roundhouse. But from a lobbyist, from getting in touch with your legislator's perspective, it's actually a very easy place, very accessible place for the average citizen. Now he's talking about, well, when they walk between the convention center and the Roundhouse and back and forth, that's going to be the time when everybody is trying to corral these people. So you're going to be having, could be a breakfast burrito, could be a margarita, could be any number of things, just trying to yell at these people and grab them, like at the White House press conferences or where the president's walking from place to place, just people shouting out questions and items, because you just can't have those conversations in the same way over the phone, over text, or in Zoom. It does not work the same.
Okay. So, Paul, as we got through March and into April, you came and noticed that Mayor Tim Keller, City of Albuquerque, was doing some things with the city website that you didn't agree with.
So he actually did those in the fall, in the last election, on democracy dollars and also some of the bonds. So this is a 2019 holdover issue, but we did win a complaint against Keller for essentially having statements to the effect of you should vote for X, Y, and Z on the city's website, which is taxpayer financed. That was wrong. He copped to that, and he said he won't do it again. April was an incredibly productive month for us at the Rio Grande Foundation because, once we kind of hit 2 weeks after the initial crisis of COVID-19, we realized that the governor was not handling things correctly. And Mayor Keller had been assigned brand new powers, also behind closed doors. So we had a transparency lawsuit. Unfortunately, that was just one of many judicial decisions handed down saying, you know, that these newfangled ways of doing things behind closed doors, passing restrictions beyond the public's view was just fine. And we have real problems with that, but that's what the judges said. And April, then we also created our fairlyopen.com website where we put out a concept that kind of flew in the face of what the governor has put out. And we've lived with this whole idea of essential and non-essential businesses and not really treating one business like another. And, I'm very proud of what Fairly Open was trying to do. It also called for transparency in decision making and data. And while the governor and David Scrace have gotten better with those, we really don't understand at all as a public where we are going, what data they're using to justify their decisions, et cetera.
Paul, does it help if our listeners contact the governor's office with their feelings about these?
It can't hurt. It can't hurt, but. Unfortunately, the reality is that dictatorships and single party rule, unless you give them a black eye at the election, and we just had a chance with the legislature, we could have given her a massive rebuke and said, we're going to go a different direction from your preferred, candidate. So the unfortunate thing is that, while emails and calls can help, she's grown quite comfortable with this power here that she has. And finally, in April, we came up with our taxpayer protection pledge. Now, one of my heroes and friends, Grover Norquist up in Washington, he has his taxpayer pledge to, essentially get politicians on the record as not supporting tax increases. Ours applied for 2020 and now into 2021. We think it's the height of, bad public policy for politicians to go ahead and say we're going to increase taxes at this point, given all the challenges businesses of all stripes, not to mention restaurants and others that have been shut down, will face. But we have deep concerns that the legislature will be considering some substantial tax increases here in the upcoming session. And the good news is those people are more responsive because they – they have a little bit more direct concern with what their citizens are saying. And definitely as the session unfolds, get in touch with folks and say, do not raise taxes. This is not the right time to raise taxes. So we have a full list of pledge signers at riograndefoundation.org/pledge. And that was obviously published before the primary, before the general, and it's still relevant information, though.
Paul, I can't help but think about the Gessing family in the midst of all of these issues. You guys made a big decision to homeschool your kids. How's that been going?
It has gone very well. We gave them this week off between Christmas and New Year's. But
oh, you soft.
I know. We did have classes Monday through Wednesday before Christmas, and we'll be back at it the Monday after New Year's. It's an interesting experience. I've enjoyed it. I think they have, too, from talking to them. And more importantly, they've had some stability in this really challenging time. And, I understand that not everybody can do that. Homeschooling is a big commitment for a lot of folks. But, man, in this challenging time, a combination of not only homeschooling, but really emphasizing their opportunities to play and meet with other kids and get together with folks, often just at a park whenever you got 50 degree weather, it's sunny, it's warm enough for me and for the kids. And, it's just great to get them out and able to do things, because homeschooling, while it's great educationally, you miss out on some of the social opportunities that they have, but, no complaints so far. And, whatever the governor does with regard to education, we're going to continue at least through the end of this year.
We made it through half the year and half the list, so we got to get you back here in a couple weeks, Paul.
Well, happy to do it. We'll be facing a legislative session beginning, I believe, the 19th of January. So if you want to do a legislative preview or whatever during that time, happy to come by again.
Happy New Year, Paul.
Happy New Year, Jim.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosque Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosque Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.